You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're continuing conversations surrounding the California primary. Voters have until 8 p.m. tonight to cast their ballot. If you still haven't opened yours yet, perhaps you even want to register. We'll have some last-minute tips from the California Voter Foundation in just a minute. But first, we're going to dive into one of the biggest statewide decisions on the ballot, Prop 1. Joining us now is CAP Radio's healthcare reporter, Kate Wolf, with an explainer. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Vicky.
Okay, so you joined us not too long ago about Prop 1. I mean, this is a proposition on the voter guide that spans like 60 or 70 pages. It is a monster. It can be complicated. That can be difficult for voters. So remind us what it would do.
Prop 1 would do two things. It would allow the state to borrow $6.4 billion by selling bonds to build 4,500 supportive housing units and 6,800 slots for mental health and substance use treatment. The second thing it would do would be change the terms of the Mental Health Services Act. That's a law that voters passed in 2004. It currently allocates money from a tax on millionaires toward mental health treatment in counties. Counties currently spend it on programs they've developed. This would change it so more goes to housing and specific supports for people who are the most mentally ill and drug addicted, less towards existing outpatient and crisis services.
So when we go a little bit deeper, who is backing Prop 1 and who is against Prop 1?
This is really Governor Gavin Newsom's baby. He is the biggest supporter. Some of his allies, as well as big city mayors, are also for it. Supporters include also health plans, hospital and firefighters associations, and the National Alliance on Mental Illness in California. Opponents are some Republican officials, taxpayers associations, and also some progressive opponents include Cal Voices, Disability Rights California, and ACLU Northern California. And they highlight that some of the money in the bond could go toward involuntary treatment, like acute psychiatric hospitals.
And there has been polling in the months leading up to the primary about, you know, how voters feel about Prop 1 in California. I mean, how has that evolved? And really, Governor Newsom has been campaigning for Prop 1. Has that been effective?
Right. So it has shown that voters are slightly less likely to vote for Prop 1. Governor Newsom has really come out with these latest polls to rally support. I think the governor's main messages were that this would help veterans. Certainly a number, certainly a big chunk of the money goes towards housing and treatment for veterans. And his tagline, treatment not tents, has been, I think, effective. But nobody that I talked to today at the polls mentioned veterans when I asked about Prop 1. So I'm not sure that message has really stuck. But I do think his linking this to a lack of community funding after deinstitutionalization in the 50s and 60s has made sense for a lot of people. That has helped people understand, oh, this is why we're in the situation we're in with drug use and mental illness on the street. And I think for a lot of people that resonates and they believe it's time to reinvest in treatment.
I mean, researching this prop is far from leisure reading. And I've said that before. So when you went out this morning, you're talking to people who are out casting their ballots. What did they have to say about Prop 1?
I was in Midtown this morning, and I'll say I was really impressed with all the voters I talked to who showed up in Midtown. This is a super complicated situation, and I found that most people had a good grasp on it. There was some misinformation. Some people were thinking more money was going to states. Some people were thinking this would increase involuntary treatment by a large amount. But in general, you know, the first question I asked is, what do you know about Prop 1? And a lot of people had had a clear idea.
Did people give any indication about how they were going to be voting? And you actually have some sound from voters as well.
Yes. So I got a huge range of responses. People really filled me in on what they were thinking. It's a little windy. It was a little windy out there. So there's some wind sound. But here's some of what people said.
In general, when there is an increase a bond or a tax measure or whatever, I don't support it, primarily because of fiscal mismanagement that exists every day, all day, in this thing called government. And giving them more money is not going to solve any problems at all, irrespective of the validity of the issue.
Sounds, you know, on its face like kind of a good idea, but yeah, the idea of committing people involuntarily didn't sit right, so I think we're both planning to vote no.
Yeah.
I
thought it was time for reform. None of the counties are able to operate with like a cohesive way to treat mental health, and none of them work together. Like none of the departments, they're all kind of siloed away from each other. So I thought that if we're going to take a look at reforming it, we better do it soon.
Did you have any reservations about Prop 1?
Yeah, the cost.
I know that it's an important tool for California to address a lot of the longstanding problems. It's not the solution, but it's a kind of a piece of a tool in a toolbox, so I'm supporting it.
I'll be honest, I typically vote no on propositions just because they typically have unintended consequences. But I think back to Prop 13, which was years and years and years ago when I was a child, but I still grew up with a lot of the consequences, with my father having been a school teacher at the time and seeing kind of the erosion of our public school systems and kind of what that did to the public school systems.
So that was Brian Wagoner, Tom and Alex Lawrence, Andrew Mendoza, Angela Tate, and Vicky Wells, all live in Midtown.
Mm. Finally, Kate, we touched upon, polling, but, when you actually look at the most recent polling, which I think is from this month, what does it say?
Yeah, March 1st poll from Berkeley's Institute of Governmental Studies showed that even in late February, they talked to people in late February, 16% of likely voters were undecided about the measure. And actually, some folks I talked to said, I'm going to make a decision in the poll, right? While I'm filling out my ballot. So they still were not decided. 50% in that poll said they were likely yes, 34% a likely no. That was tending along party lines. Democrats more likely to vote yes, Republicans more likely to vote no. It's different from what we saw from the Public Policy Institute of California in December, when 2 in 3 likely voters polled were supportive of Prop 1. So there is a slight decline in prospective support. But the measure needs a simple majority of the vote to pass. So we'll see.
And we're talking at 12:30. So there's still 7.5 hours. Thanks, Kate.
Yeah, thank you.
That is Cap Radio's healthcare reporter, Kate Wolf. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. We just finished getting a broad statewide look at races for the California primary, but there are also hyper-local races that have a big impact on neighborhoods. I want to bring in Cap Radio Sacramento education reporter, Srishti Prabha, who was also out talking to voters this morning. Hey, Srishti.
Hi, Vicky.
Okay, so you were at a polling place at the Greater Sacramento Urban League in Del Paso Heights, speaking with voters. How was it out there?
Yes, I was out there with my fellow reporter, Tony Rodriguez. We talked to voters and voting site workers to get a pulse of what the community, and specifically communities of color, are feeling about the primaries. And the primaries usually have a lower voter turnout for younger voters and voters of color.
Yeah, and we were just talking about ballot returns so far for this specific primary, and it is a low turnout so far. That can change. What is the approach to engage and for outreach for younger voters and voters of color?
Yeah, sometimes I think outreach doesn't look as intentional as we would think, right? Some of the people that I was talking to at the voting site were just people who were working there, and they felt their presence, the fact that they've been doing it for so many years, their familiar face, that could be something that brings people out to vote, especially in a community like Del Paso Heights, where people are very, very invested in their communities. So I spoke to someone named Patricia Galindo, who is a clerk working at the polling center in Del Paso Heights, and she's been doing this work for years.
I've been doing it since I was 18. I am now 39. At my job, a lot of the kids that I work with, they had never voted before. So being able to speak to them like, hey, you should really come in, like register to vote, do this. And I've even had people, like my niece, I got her to work as a clerk. It's just fun. It's a fun experience.
Yeah, maybe once you're a clerk, you're you have to vote. So that's a great way to do that. And then I also spoke to Gloriana Jackson, who is also a clerk at the site and a younger voter who was interested in getting young voters to vote in the primaries and wanted to be that familiar face.
People in my age group don't really come and vote. They're not really aware of what's going on and how this affects us. So that's why I try to give back. That's why I try to be a friendly face and get the word out that we need to vote. Because when I talk to people, I say, did you vote? And then I say, well, I haven't either. We could do it together. Or, here's a book. Read it and just let them know you're not alone.
Both are residents of Del Paso Heights and are really community driven and focused. Yeah.
I love that, from like a new generation of someone volunteering at a poll site to someone who's been doing it for like 21 years. Yeah. And I know for me and my friends, we usually have like informational parties and about our ballots. So it makes it fun. You can do it over breaking bread and dinner. Mm-hmm. As an education reporter, you have joined us multiple times to talk about school boards, the importance of school boards and races. Did you see people interested in voting on local school boards?
Vicky, you know I had to ask. I love school boards, and I think school boards control the state of education. So I can never emphasize this topic enough. And so luckily, some of the people that I did speak to, or the ones that had it on their ballot, because it wasn't on all their ballots, were actually really invested in the power of school boards. One such voter was a Grant Union High School staff member, Danny Augustine.
The school board is important to me because that's how some of the policies and procedures are put into the schools, and it's important to what they pass and what they don't pass. I'm an active member at the high school, so I also need to know what's going on at my high school through the board and through the school.
And then I spoke to an older voter, 68-year-old Kenneth Buchanan, who doesn't have kids in the system but cares about education and the need to exercise your right to vote.
I think all of the elections are important, period, especially the primary election. I think the school board is influential in what type of books go into the school and what type of social norms go into the school.
Yeah, and these down ballot races, although so important to communities and neighborhoods, you know, oftentimes they can be really difficult to research. And maybe you don't even know until you open your ballot that, like, oh, there's a school board race. So what local school board races are on the ballot?
Yeah, that's very true, Vicky. So this time we have the Sacramento County Office of Education's board races, which are in Area 4, 5, 6, and 7. Area 4 has 5 candidates running, and Area 6 has 2. The other are all uncontested. Twin Rivers has races in Area 1, 3, 5, and 7, and only Area 7 is contested, which makes me question, why are they all so uncontested?
Yeah, maybe that can be your next story.
Exactly.
You could join us on Insight, yeah. Giving us some more perspective. I mean, finally, what are some of the big difficulties that you've learned when talking to voters when it comes to actually making a decision on the school board?
It's hard, right? It's one of the things that you said. There's not enough information. Candidates can be pretty unresponsive. They might not even have a website. So one of the things, even as a reporter, it's pretty hard to just get in contact and get information and be able to make an informed vote. And many of times these people hold these positions for many years uncontested and choose not to engage in the interviewing process to not get bad press. So if you see an uncontested race, I think you should always question why that exists.
Srishti, thank you.
Thank you, Vicky.
Srishti Prabhakar is CAP Radio's Sacramento education reporter. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you still have questions on how or where to vote, our next guest will walk you through some of the most common issues when it comes to voting. Kim Alexander is the president and founder of the nonpartisan California Voter Foundation. Welcome back to Insight, Kim. You're muted, Kim. There we go.
Got it. Hi, Vicky.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Good afternoon. Okay, it is 12:40 in the afternoon. What is your main message to people who have an unopened ballot right now?
What are you waiting for? Open up your ballot, get it out, take a look at it, vote on the contest you want to vote on, take it to a voting site or a drop box today. Most of the drop boxes are open till 8 p.m. in Sacramento, but not all of them. So you might want to check your voter information guide or the information that came in your mail envelope from the county elections office and make sure you go to a site that's open at the time that you're going. You could drop off your ballot at any voting site. And you don't have to vote on everything on the ballot. Your team did a great job explaining some of these really complicated measures. I know one thing that keeps people from voting is, you know, they don't want to make the wrong choice. And so, vote on one way on something and find out later they wish they'd vote opposite. So if you're not sure, vote on the things you feel comfortable about and skip the other ones. The point is to be a voter.
What if you haven't registered yet?
You can still vote today. You can go to a vote center. It's called conditional registration. You'll fill out a form. They'll also invite you to fill out a ballot at the same time. And your ballot will go inside an envelope and your elections office will verify that you didn't vote somewhere else and that you're eligible to vote in that county before they take that ballot out and they count it. And those get counted last, but they do get counted. Most provisional and conditional ballots in the state get counted.
Hmm. You also have a voter guide on your website. We have that linked on our Insight page. What are some of the most common questions that you're working to answer for voters across the state?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question because we actually looked at our usage stats this week to see, you know, what is getting the most hits. And the thing people are looking at more than anything else is, how do I correct a mistake on my ballot? You know, people fill out, you know, a choice, they realize later they wanted to vote differently. They don't want to try to get a new ballot. And so every county's instructions might not be exactly the same, but what our county elections office says in the voter guide is just put an X through the choice that you made that you didn't mean to make, and make the choice that you want and draw an arrow to it or asterisk it. Just note it that that's what your preference. Don't write your name down or anything like that. Don't sign it. But just make it really clear what you intended to do. And your elections office has teams of people who will remake ballots that come in that have these errors on them so that your votes will be counted accurately in the scanner.
Hmm. Another piece of the ballot that might catch some voters off guard, it's the Senate race, because there's actually two different categories when it comes to U.S. Senate candidates. One is for the full term. The other is for the remaining term through January of 2025. Does it concern you that maybe someone might just select their candidate for one of them and think, okay, I'm done, and not actually make the selection for both of them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not happy with what we're doing with these special vacancy elections. This is the second election in a row where we've had a little bit of a term left. And by the time the election's all said and done, there's only a couple weeks left in that remainder of the term. And I know this law requiring these elections was passed with the best intentions, but I think it's just making things more difficult and confusing for voters, making our ballots longer than they need to be. You can vote in both those contests. The main contest is for the full 6-year term. That's the contest that has lots of candidates on it. And then there below it, at least on my ballot, you know, is this special vacancy contest that only has 7 candidates on it. And you can vote in that one as well. You can vote for the same candidate you voted for the full term, or you can vote for a different candidate in that race. But whoever wins that contest is only going to be our U.S. senator for a couple of weeks by the time the election's all said and done.
As you know, ballots went out a month ago, and as of this morning, according to Political Data Inc., 14% of registered voters have sent back their ballots. You've been involved in elections going back many election cycles. Does a 14% ballot return so far today for the primary, is that concerning to you?
It always concerns me when people choose not to vote, but I also know that, you know, this is an election where we have a presidential primary that's not as contested as the last two were in California, where we saw pretty robust turnout. But, you know, it's on the bigger scale, Vicky, it's important to remember that, you know, most Californians aren't voting, period. When you look at everyone who's eligible to vote, we sent out 22 million ballots. There's millions more Californians who are eligible but not even registered to vote. And so, you know, what would it be like if 22 or 25 million people voted in this state? It would be amazing. And the problem is that, you know, people who are young and not courted by campaigns and don't see the issues they care about, they are not engaged in the process, so they don't vote. And then because they're not voting, politicians don't try to appease them and speak to them and bring them in. So we have this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that we need to break. And it's really important. I loved you were saying earlier about having ballot parties. You know, I loved hearing the reporters on the street talking to people about Prop 1. Those of us who are engaged, it's really our duty to reach out to people around us who maybe are confused by this process and give them a hand. You know, I often ask people when they don't vote, you know, why are you not voting? And they're so afraid of being judged, and they feel ashamed about it. And the truth is that a lot of us don't feel confident when we vote, and we don't like to do things we feel we're not good at. So we need to make our ballots easier to understand. We need to make the process simpler, so there's not so many, you know, things that you have to make sure you get right for your ballot to count. And we need to have more sympathy for people who are bewildered by all of this. The important thing is to be a voter. It's not to have the right answer for every question on the ballot. It's not a test. You want you and people in your demographic to be in the voting process, so politicians have to listen to what you care about.
Kim, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Vicky.
Kim Alexander is the president and founder of the nonpartisan California Voter Foundation. Still ahead, we're going to check in with our local election offices in Sacramento, Yolo, and Placer counties. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.